Welcome to Game Notes, the podcast that starts with Tony laughing in the background. I'm Dave DeFore. That's Tony Jones that you heard giggling on the other line. What's up, Tony?
Like a schoolboy.
Why are we laughing, Tony?
I'm laughing because last night was the turning point in the race for it all. And by the race for it all, one team went up by one game, and we are not talking about the race for the number one seed. We are talking about the race for steak. And who went up? Who's got the tiebreaker?
It's like Greg Popovich doesn't even care if I have to pay for this steak or not, okay? You can't lose that second game. I'm sorry, Pop. I know you're the greatest coach in NBA history, but you can't drop that second game
early.
It's awful. It was such a bummer because Utah just came out and they bulldozed them right off the bat. And I just had to sit there and watch that score roll in, knowing that that was actually my steak slipping out of my hands. Actually, it was the money slipping out of my hands to pay for your steak. Because I don't know how I'm going to make it up. We'll figure it out at the end of the show. But Tony, there's a hot button issue.
You got to take chances now. You got to take chances.
I know. There's a hot button issue that we've got to get to, though.
Yes.
Is Rudy Gobert a Hall of Famer?
So this has been, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't been caught up, this has been a topic on Twitter the last few days. And I think it's an interesting and a really polarizing topic. Not polarizing for me because I lean strongly one way, but it's polarizing to a lot of people who don't see Rudy Gobert in the same way as some people see Rudy Gobert. I think the answer is yes. I think he is firmly on a trajectory to be a Hall of Fame candidate. And this is why. He's about to be four-time All-NBA. He's about to be a three-time Defensive Player of the Year, unless he gets utterly robbed. And he's a two-time All-Star. He's, at the very least, whether you call him the best player or not the best player, he's at the very least the most impactful player on a team that's in the running for a number one seed. The only thing that eludes him right now is postseason success, which needs to come, which needs to happen. But if you couple that with the success that he's had internationally, because this is the Basketball Hall of Fame and not the NBA Hall of Fame, I think that the answer of whether he's trending towards being a Hall of Famer is a firm yes. He's 28. He'll be 29 in June. I think he's got, at least 3 years left at this current level. And right now, I think he's playing at an insane level of basketball.
Well, right now, Basketball Reference has him at about a 6% chance of making a Hall of Fame. But I'm going to say that tends to skew towards statistics. And there's a lot of stuff with Rudy that just doesn't show up on a box score. I mean, the offensive stuff isn't as apparent as the defense. Like, you can look at him on defense and you know what he does, but he leads the league in shooting percentage. I mean, he literally leads the league in field goal percentage. He draws a ton of fouls. He's a hell of a screener. He's a great rebounder. He is the most underrated player in the league, as John Hollinger said over at The Athletic in his column this week about underrated players. Like, he is the most underrated and disrespected. And it's because he, maybe he can't guard Steph Curry on the perimeter. But Tony, who can guard Steph Curry on the perimeter? Aside from Kevin Love, right? Like,
Kevin Love did it for one possession, but that was an important possession.
Yeah, and Steph Curry was doing it on a bum knee. But healthy Steph Curry?
True.
Come on, man. Rudy Gobert is great. The Hall of Fame, I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Four All-NBAs, and he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year again this year. That'll make it three. I just don't see how you can keep him out. But I also think Ben Wallace is a Hall of Famer, and he's currently not.
But see, that's the measuring stick, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Ben Wallace has a chip. So if you've got a championship, if Rudy Gobert were to win a title this year, I think the narrative completely changes.
But Ben Wallace has a chip, and he's not in the Hall of Fame.
I understand that. No. I mean, again, it's hard to – for guys who are defensive Hall of Famers, I think it's hard. Because now, you can't just go, this guy averaged 25 a game.
I don't think Ben Wallace is nearly the offensive impactful player that Rudy Gobert is.
Oh, I agree
don't
with think that he completely.
Was. He didn't impact Detroit's offense the way Rudy Gobert impacts. You know, people don't realize this. Rudy Gobert is not quite as impactful offensively as he is defensively for the Jazz, but is not far off. He is in a lot of ways, he is the centerpiece of what they do. His screening unlocks their entire offense, and his rim running and the gravity and his finishing, it makes them unique. Like right now, the Jazz are a unique team because, you know, everybody says, hey, you know, this is a Jazz team. You know, they rely on the three. They rely on the three. They rely on the three. But they also put tremendous pressure on the rim. And that's because of Rudy Gobert. And that's what makes them so unique offensively. But the litmus test is Ben Wallace, right? Like the comparison is Ben Wallace. Those are probably the two, those two along with Dwight Howard are the three big men in the last 15 years that you can point to and you can say, okay, those guys, those are your elite defensive bigs in the NBA. And Ben Wallace is not in the Hall of Fame. And Ben Wallace was one of the most impactful players on a championship team.
And you're recording this from your car?
Yes, I am.
And did you just get out of the gym?
I know. You know where I just came from? I just came from getting my second shot.
Oh, all right. So I can see you in a few weeks.
Yeah, you can see me in a few weeks and we can hug.
That's we right. Can't wait.
You know, I mean, we could even go.
Sorry, I didn't mean to take us. I didn't mean to take us off topic, but I just heard you honking your horn.
A guy almost hit me.
Are you podcasting and driving right now?
I'm podcasting, driving, and almost getting into a car accident.
You know, I'm gonna have to cut all this, right?
No, you better not cut all this because it shows my multitasking.
Oh, okay. I'll run it through production. Look. When you look at the impact metrics, and I know that the raw offensive numbers aren't that spectacular, like they just don't jump out at you. But the impact metrics that tries to measure everything, it tries to, you know, measure it per minute. It tries to take into account what you do defensively. I mean, he scores very well. He scores up there with Jokic and Embiid in all of these things. But it just doesn't look the same because the offense doesn't functionally run through him. Even though when you run as much pick and roll as they do, it technically does, right?
Right.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So the weakness offensively for Rudy Gobert is when a team switches everything and he can't punish the switch by putting somebody in the basket. But,
right.
You know,
right.
When teams run a drop big against him, when the teams run a drop big, he's the reason why, you know, I think the Jazz are almost impervious to having drop big run against them because, you know, it doesn't matter whether he screens or rescreens. He's going to catch you off of one of the screens and their pick and roll guys are going to get separation off of one of the screens and get downhill. And either they're going to get a wide open floater or they're going to get a layup or they're going to get a wide open three off of ball movement. And that's all what Rudy does. You know, I just think that he's tremendously unique. And I think he's one of the most impactful players in the league. I mean, people are all over the place on where to rank him, but he's solidly, for me, he's solidly in the top 15. I think he's one of the top 15 players in the league pretty easily right now on both ends of the floor. And you look at the Jazz right now, they're missing Mike Conley and they're missing Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, they've taken some lumps without those two, but, you know, they've quietly won four out of their last five, you know, and, you know, one of the guys that's getting 25 minutes a game in their rotation is a two-way guy. And that's Trent Forrest, who has played really, really well. But the fact is he was a two-way guy and he might've been the last player on the roster when the season started. And so it just, that just speaks to how impactful Rudy has been and how good he's been, on both ends of the floor, that the Jazz could still remain in the hunt for the number one seed without a literal all-star backcourt and a guy who, you know, probably should be in the all-NBA conversation and Donovan Mitchell. So I think that's a tremendous, testament. To how Rudy Gobert, how good Rudy Gobert is then.
I mean, he's just not going to ever get any credit. That's the thing. But I actually think that the MVP conversation, it kind of matters to a certain degree, like when we're talking about the season. And it feels weird that Rudy is completely left out of the conversation. Completely. And I'm not saying that he should be the MVP. I think it's Jokic, and I probably have Chris Paul and even Embiid ahead of him. But in that 4-5 spot, I don't know, man. I think you have to give some credit to Rudy Gobert. He literally anchors that defense, and we just talked about all the ways that he's super important for that offense. Why do you think he can't get any MVP love? Do you think it's just because it's Utah, or is it because it's Rudy?
Well, he got blamed for a lot of COVID.
It's true.
And that is asinine and unfortunate.
Well, and also a lot of people outside of that situation, they saw the one clip with him, you know, making light of the situation and touching the microphones and stuff. And he has unfortunately had to pay the price for that since.
And you know what? And I thought that was asinine because I knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was sticking up for the reporters. Let's give context with this situation.
Well, we were all stupid.
No, we were all dumb about everything when everything started.
I think holding it against him is unfair.
I really need to give context to what happened there.
Sure.
What happened there was that the Jazz limited the access, and it wasn't the Jazz, it was the NBA.
Right.
Right when COVID started, the NBA limited access, and we were limited from, you know, one-on-one in-person interviews. This was right when we were coming off of our road trip. It was our East Coast road trip. One-on-one in-person interviews, and we had to do, you know, the 6 feet thing. And this was the first time we were introduced to it. The reporters, the day-to-day reporters, the Jazz reporters, we didn't like it. And we were grumbling about it. And Rudy Gobert did that and it was his message, his subtle message of saying, hey, we're with you guys. We understand what you're going through. So in a large way, Rudy Gobert was sticking up for the writers when he did that. He wasn't doing that being flippant towards COVID. He was doing that out of solidarity with the day-to-day writers. And nobody talks about that. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'm not the only reporter that's tried to put this out there that was close to that situation. But that's what happened. It wasn't Rudy Gobert saying, you know, F COVID or whatever.
This isn't something to worry about or anything like
right.
that.
Right. This was Rudy Gobert saying, you know, us as players, we understand and we're not scared of you. You know, just like you shouldn't be scared of us. This was solidarity.
And then some colossally bad luck that he is the first guy to test positive in the league.
It was colossally bad luck. And obviously, you know, he shouldn't have done it because, you know, it just, it, it, no matter what happens, nobody was going to look at it that way. That wasn't there. That wasn't close to it.
Right.
But that's what it was. And I just think it was really unfortunate how that was construed and how much unfair flack that he took for that. So there, I've said my piece on that.
I mean, I think I agree with you, but this stuff with Rudy was happening before that. I think a lot of people didn't like, being upset about not making an All-Star game.
Right.
You know, that's a thing. Damian Lillard did something similar and people didn't seem to care as much.
Dame received some flack, not as much as Rudy. But
not as much as Rudy. It doesn't come up every single time that he gets snubbed for something.
Right.
And I don't want to say it's all xenophobia, but there's a little bit of that for sure, because we see it with other guys. I mean, Jokic is dealing with a little bit of that now.
I think rightly or wrongly, I think that Damian Lillard's peers see Damian Lillard in a different way than Rudy Gobert's peers see Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Dame's a much better player too, right? Like that matters a little bit as well.
And that affects the reaction. You know, can you imagine PJ Tucker coming out and chiding Damian Lillard for, you know, what he perceives to be whining? You know, Damian Lillard would approach PJ Tucker the very next time he sees him and challenge him to a fight, like on the spot, whether he would win or lose.
I don't get the disrespect to Rudy. It's very odd to me. He's clearly an impactful and good player. But I think that in order to change that, they have to make conference finals or better this year.
I agree.
I think if they make the conference finals, the conversation is much different next season.
No, I do think there are some caveats with that. I think you want to change the postseason perception. You know, you can't lose to Phoenix. You can't lose to Denver. It just is what it is. You know, if you want to change the postseason perception, if you're the Jazz, you got to beat those teams.
Man, this Bucks-Jazz finals is going to be ridiculous.
Oh, it would be ridiculous. I would hope that the NBA fan tunes into that, because that would be a great series.
All right, Tony. As we wrap up, we got to do this thing. Even though I'm losing, we got to do this thing. On the season, you're now 42-20 in our picks, and I'm 41-21. The damn Spurs got me by dropping the back-to-back. I went 3-1 last week. You went 4-0, blah, blah, blah.
That steak is tasting so good.
You know, look, it's like the Spurs didn't even care. I'm just so bummed out by that. All right, they got the Nuggets Friday night. I think the Nuggets are going to win this one. The Nuggets have been really good since Jamal Murray has been down. They're playing huge sometimes. They can actually match the physicality that Utah brings. I worry a little bit about their perimeter defense and the way that I know Utah is going to want to launch it. But I think Denver's going to win this game. What about you?
I got Denver. I just think that they, you know, I think even with no Jamal Murray, I think to beat this Denver team, the Jazz have to be whole. Nikola Jokic is just playing. He's playing at a silly level. I don't think anybody in their wildest imagination thought that Jokic would ever play at the level that he's playing at right now. He's playing like a 7-foot version of Larry Bird.
I mean, I think he's playing. I mean, right now he's playing the best basketball of anyone in the league that isn't Steph Curry, right?
Why are we laughing at my 7-foot version of Larry Bird comp?
Well, because it's just, I mean, you're not wrong. He can get a bucket whenever he wants. And it reminds me of the stories about Bird, you know, where Bird would just say, hey, I'm gonna dribble down here to this spot and I'm going to hit this shot.
I'm just going to play this game left-handed. How about
that? And there's just not much you can do against Jokic right now. They got the Rockets. It's a back-to-back.
That's a win.
That's a win. Yeah. Because the Rockets don't have a team. But it's a back-to-back. And I wonder, you know, is this not the time? And I know that they really want that one seed. And, of course, they're going to be watching Phoenix closely. But should they be thinking about trying to sneak some rest for Rudy, or you feel like they're pretty comfortable with where he's at right now?
I think they're comfortable with Rudy's A. Here's the thing with Rudy. The Jazz have limited his minutes in a significant way this year. Mm-hmm. He's playing like 33 minutes a night. Can you look that up?
Yeah, I'll look it up.
He's playing like 33, 34 minutes a night. And it might even be lower than that.
He's playing 30.8 minutes a game.
Is it really that low?
30.8 minutes a game. That's pretty incredible, actually.
He's playing 30 minutes a night. So, I mean, the Jazz, and for somebody of Rudy's stature to play that little in the absolute prime of his career, I'm not sure there's a comp for that. So, I mean, Rudy Gobert, in my estimation, can easily play 41 minutes a night in the playoffs. Easily.
Yeah. Okay, they got the Warriors. That's going to be Monday, and that's a road game at Golden State. Steph Curry playing his tail off right now. I think it's going to be a tough game. Who you got?
I'm going to take the Jazz. I think they're going to go into that game looking at Golden State as a team that they might see in the next week. And they didn't play well at Golden State after the All-Star game. I'm going to take the Jazz.
I'm going to take the Warriors because the Warriors are going to be fighting for the 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah, that's a huge game for the Warriors. Yes.
Yeah, so I might be able to catch you. And then they got the Blazers Wednesday. That's a home game in Utah. I just don't think the Blazers are good enough, to be honest with you. I think that's a loss for the Blazers.
I'm going to take the Jazz as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So this team is pretty good. And I do think that when we look back at this season, so much of it is just going to be instructed by the playoffs. But all of the indicators for this team put it in the elite category. And I'm curious to see how we feel about them once we see them in this first playoff series. Because they're going to win the first round no matter what. But I'm curious to see if they play the Warriors, like what does the Warrior game plan look like to try to exploit what they think the weaknesses of this Jazz team? I want to see what happens once the playoffs start and teams start digging into their tricks that they have saved up for Utah.
But the problem is that Quinn Snyder's got tricks saved up for the other teams as well.
That's true. That's true.
There are a few coaches on the face of this earth that I trust more than Quinn Snyder in a playoff series.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a good run. I'm expecting them to make the conference finals. So much is up in the air. You know, the LeBron ankle issue, Anthony Davis actually starting to look a little bit better, at least having flashes of looking better. The Clippers have been great. Phoenix has been great and is a tough matchup for Utah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff up in the air, especially in the West. But I don't know, man. I think I just trust this team a little bit.
I do. The problem is I still don't think this team is matchup proof. And there's just so much of a chance you can see the Lakers or the Clippers in the second round. Yeah. You know, and it doesn't matter how good you are when you play against those teams. That's a toss-up at best.
Mm-hmm. To me, though, that's the cool thing about the playoffs this year, though.
Yeah.
It's all going to be about the matchups, and it literally is going to be about the styles making the fight. It was very similar in the bubble last year. So I'm excited for the parity. I think it's going to be great. We're going to have fantastic playoffs. But we still got a ways to go. So that's going to do it for this week, folks. Thank you for listening to the Game Notes podcast. For Tony Jones, I'm Dave DeFore, and we'll catch you next week with another episode.